Okay, 2 weeks ago I had a mentor in the back row. Now I have one in the front row, but it's okay. I appreciate all my mentors. It's perfectly okay. Today we're going to begin with an adult picture book, the title of which is Shadows of the Neanderthal. Now, this book was actually written to help people really explore their beliefs and how their beliefs might limit them in their personal lives and also in organizations. But I find in it deep spiritual meaning, and I hope you all will find it also. So our story begins. Once upon a time, there were five cave people. Their names were Unga, Bunga, Oogie, Boogie, and Trevor. They lived together in a cave. In fact, the cave people never left the cave. They stayed there day in and day out, waiting for dead bugs and dried leaves to blow in so that they might have something to eat. The cave people embraced this isolated lifestyle. That's because they believed that the mouth of the cave was the edge of the universe. This situation produced some interesting existential reflections among the cave people. Outside of cave is nothing. Go outside and poof. No more Unga, preached Unga. No, outside is big dragon. Dragons swallow Bunga whole. Whoops, sorry. There's Bunga. Dragons swallow Bunga whole, corrected Bunga. No, no, said Oogie. Outside is big mad god. Big mad god, stomp on Oogie and splat. Big gross mess. Despite their theological differences, the cave people were united on one point. They must never leave the cave. In fact, just to be safe, the cave people never even faced the mouth of the cave. They lived their entire existence with their backs turned to the entrance. As you can imagine, life was pretty dull for the small clan, and their backs were always sunburned. Sometimes an animal would pass by in front of the cave, but the cave people would never see the animal. Instead, with their backs turned, they would only see the animal's shadow projected on the cave's back wall. To the cave people, these shadows were reality. Thus, if a hyena came leaping by the mouth of the cave people would cower from its shadow. If a butterfly drifted by, they would leap up in delight and chase its delicate, fluttering shadow. Once, a crazed giraffe stomped a warthog to death outside the cave. Nobody could figure out what the heck that was. The cave people never realized how limited their understanding of the world was. For them, it was just truth, and they were satisfied. Every year, as springtime rolled around, the cave people look forward to another long, productive season in the cave, painting stick figures on the walls, eating dead bugs, and sculpting bowls out of clay. Yet, one soft spring morning, Boogie woke up feeling restless. Boogie, bored and hungry, he said, as he chewed on a dried magnolia leaf that had blown into the cave. Looking around the same old drab walls of the cave, he casually mused, Boogie, wonder what is outside cave. The others stared at Boogie in shocked disbelief. No one had ever said such a thing before. Boogie tried to explain. Boogie just wonder if maybe more food outside, or maybe more water, or maybe more room. What Boogie talking about? Asked Unga, incredulous. Plenty of room here, snapped Bunga. And plenty of food, said Trevor, sucking on a rock. But we only see what inside the cave, Boogie said. What if we not see what really is? The question was very disturbing to the other cave people. They began to get angry. Boogie say we wrong, cried Unga. Boogie lost mine, said Bunga. Boogie delusional and narcissistic, concluded Trevor, who has often soothed his own insecurities by labeling others with sweeping psychotherapeutic generalities. Boogie want to ruin everything, accused Oogie. This would be the end of us. If Boogie so curious, snarled Unga, then Boogie can just get out of cave, go out into the nothing and go poof. Let mad God swish you like a bug, hissed Oogie. Go out and get breathed on by the dragon's bad breath, yelled Bunga. Trevor picked up a clay bowl from the ground and threw it at Boogie. The others joined in, bombarding the shocked little caveman. Yes, go, they said, just get out. Covering his head, and cowering from the bruising objects and stinging words being hurled at him, Boogie turned and faced the mouth of the cave for the very first time in his life. Go, the others yelled. Choking back his tears, he ran away from his friends toward the mouth of the cave and out into the bright light of the world outside. Dazed from the shocking attack from the other cave people, Boogie stumbled around outside for a while, wiping his eyes and just being confused. Why had this clan turned so suddenly on him and so savagely? Finally, wiping the tears from his eyes, Boogie looked up. He gasped. The outside world was big, bigger than Boogie could ever have imagined, and so full of light. He saw creatures, amazing and diverse, some he vaguely recognized from the shadows he had seen in the cave, but their shadows only hinted at their true beauty. In awe, Boogie began to explore. Now, for those of you who are dying to know the rest of the story, I could loan you the book, or I'll just tell you, Boogie spends pretty much the rest of the book exploring why his cave friends have such deeply embedded beliefs about going outside. And there are some explanations to it. But some of you may recognize this story. It's actually an adaptation of Plato's much darker tale, The Allegory of the Cave. And in the original version, it's three prisoners who've been shackled into the cave since birth, never seeing the light of day. Their bodies are chained and their heads are tied so that they can only see the stone wall in front of them. One of the prisoners escapes, like Boogie escapes in the adaptation, and he returns to free the others. But the others don't believe in the outside world he describes, and so they rise up and slaughter him. Not exactly a happy bedtime story, not even a happy Sunday morning story, but one that illustrates Plato's belief that we are all sometimes misguided cave dwellers, operating under distorted or incomplete concepts of reality. Now, obviously, the story of the cave is about people who believe the shadows, we in Unity would say appearances, are all there is. In order to apply the story to our own lives, though, we might ask, what are the mental models or beliefs, in Unity we would say consciousness, what is the consciousness that keeps Unga, Bunga, Oogie, Boogie, and Trevor in a dark cave eating leaves and bugs, so convinced that the shadows on the wall are real that they can't even entertain the possibility of a greater reality? We might actually say that the cave dwellers were victims of the strongest chains of all, the chains of their own deeply embedded belief. Belief that there was nothing more, belief that there was no greater good outside the cave, and belief that this lifestyle, this existence, was their destiny. We might say they had what we call victim consciousness. They just couldn't see their way out. And this was actually, this consciousness that they had fueled fears of what dangers might be lurking outside. Terrified, they just become more and more deeply immersed in the status quo of their lifestyle, seemingly convincing themselves that this life is okay. Maybe they think it's just what they deserve. And since we don't want to aspire to that kind of consciousness at all, let's look to Boogie and see if we can figure out what motivated him, what gave him the courage and insight to break away. Somehow, he is motivated by an inner restlessness, an intuitive sense that there must be something more, even though he doesn't really know what that might look like. And I'm guessing that many of us in this room today can relate to Boogie. simply because many of us have left behind the churches of our faith and followed our heart's desire to find unity. Not everybody. I know some of you were lucky enough to be raised in unity, but many of us weren't. At any rate, following this desire, Boogie is able to break the chains of doubt and fear, to give up the known for the unknown, and to step into the light. And when he does, a whole new world opens to him. And so it is with us. When we follow our dreams, when we come to the realization, the intuitive realization, that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, that no matter what shadows or challenges cross our paths, there is always a greater reality, a greater power. Maybe the most important thing we can learn from Boogie is that true freedom always starts in our minds, the inner before the outer. And once Boogie begins to entertain the idea that there might be something outside the cave, he is led to ask the profound question, what if we, in his cave language, what if we not see what really is? Of course, you know I had to clean up the grammar, but it's okay. And we all know how hard that realization can be, how difficult it is for us in our human skins to look past those earthly appearances that seem so real, so in our face real. Whether it's a diagnosis of self or a loved one, a dwindling bank account, a failing relationship, for us to be able to look past those things, to see a greater good, to see possibilities outside the cave, is not always easy. And in fact, this probably is never possible from our human consciousness. This looking beyond appearances that Jesus taught about so much is really a factor of spiritual vision. It seems like the cave dwellers really had an only human consciousness, and truly not a very healthy one at that. They had a perception problem, didn't they? In that they believed that everything they saw was reality. But they also had a self-perception problem, I think. That they were able to just accept their insect-eating, leaf-chewing, rock-sucking existence as their deserved destiny. And maybe there's a lesson in that for all of us, too. Because in contrast, Eric Butterworth, in a chapter, I love the title of this chapter, From Miserable Sinners to Masters. Isn't that a great title? It's in the book, Discover the Power Within, that some of us studied a few years ago. Eric Butterworth says that human beings usually hunger for freedom, freedom from want, freedom from sickness, from oppression, and most of all, from our own fears. And our way sure Jesus outlines for us the path to that freedom in a verse that we see every time we walk in the front door if we look to the right, and that is John 8:32, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Jesus came to this world to revolutionize our beliefs about God and ourselves, to help us know the nature of God as love, as Randy so beautifully explained last Sunday, and also the nature of ourselves as divine heirs, children of the Most High, because only when we know the truth can we live the truth. And we live the truth knowing our worth and power through the indwelling Christ. We can absolutely, we have the power to move out of the shadows into the light. And remember, once Boogie had a glimmer, even a little glimmer of the greater reality, it was only a matter of time until he left the cave and found his freedom. Jesus further helps us understand our divine nature in Matthew 5:48. This is in the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, "You therefore shall be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." Now, some of us might have struggled with that verse through the years. I have, because in my human skin, I don't always feel perfect. I don't know about you, but I don't always feel perfect. And so sometimes we think, well, how is that possible? But if we look at the Greek, the original Greek word for perfect, it was teleos. And teleos means complete or whole. So really what Jesus is saying is be whole like your Father is whole. that can be a shock to us sometimes to believe that we're whole. Bob and I had an experience this last week where we bought a new high chair for our little grandbaby, and we had a very little amount of time to get home and get it put together because he was on his way over. So Bob said, okay, I'll put the high chair together. You go run the errands. We had it all worked out. I went into the room to get my car keys. I came back out about 2 minutes later, and there the high chair was, completely and totally put together. I looked at Bob like, oh my gosh. And he goes, yeah, I've already done it. And then I looked at the little sign on the box that said, no assembly required. So, we too come into this world with everything we need. There's no assembly required. We're not broken. We're not separated. We are whole and one with God. And in a word, I absolutely love this Matthew 5:48 in the Message, the modern Bible. This is so funny. This is us. Picture Jesus saying this in modern language. In a word, what I'm saying to you is grow up. You're kingdom subjects. Now live like it. Live out your God-created identity, something the cave people certainly did not do. And if they had realized their wholeness, those people who stayed in the cave, their true identity, they would have joyously left the cave with Boogie instead of attacking him. And what is our true identity? That's clearly answered in what Eric Butterworth says is the most majestic verse in the whole Bible, and it comes very early. It's Genesis 1:27. So God created humankind in his image. In the image he created them, in the image of God he created them, male and female he created them. God is spirit, that's what this means, and we are created in God's image, so we too are spiritual beings, one with God. We were not created to live in a cave of darkness. We were not created to live in limitation. We were created to come into the light that we already are. And Charles Fillmore tells us in Revealing Word that light represents the understanding power of the mind. In divine order, it always comes first in consciousness. Light is a symbol of wisdom and spiritual understanding, the revelation of truth in our hearts, the revelation of God within. It is through this light of spiritual understanding that we discover and live from our true purpose. Okay, don't fall asleep on me. I've got a powerful question for you. Are you ready? This is from a book that the chaplain studied last year. It's called A Practical Guide to Meditation and Prayer by J. Douglas Bauderoff. And it's a very important question, and I want all of you to answer it for yourself. And no, it cannot be found on Google, so put your smartphones away. This is one of those deep questions. Okay, and the question is, what is your purpose? Why are you on this earth? Why are you here? I'll give you a minute to kind of think about that. Why are we here? Okay, everybody got a reason in your heads? All right. Well, Bauderoff points out that if we think our life purpose is to be a teacher, an architect, a plumber, a computer programmer, or even a mother, father, spouse, son, or daughter, we need to realize that all of those are secondary roles. He says, and I quote, if we consider our purpose to be centered in any of these areas, the time will come when we have no purpose at all. And by that he means we may retire. We may move on from that job. Our parents may pass on. Our kids grow up. Any number of things can happen to remove that supposed object of our perceived purpose. Our true purpose has to be lasting, and it has to be connected to our spiritual identity. And so, the right answer is, as spiritual beings, our true purpose is to know and experience our oneness with God, to discover and live from the Christ within. We are here to express the attributes of God on this earth, among them, love, life, wholeness, peace, joy, harmony, and all the 12 powers. Now, like the high chair, our 12 powers are not something we have to go out and get. I guess we did have to go out and get the high chair, but they are already within us, just like that high chair was put in that box. They're already within us. Charles Fillmore used kind of an old-fashioned word about the powers. He says we have to quicken our power. And by quicken, he just means to call it forth. So our powers are all there, but it's up to us to call them forth. And the interesting thing is that these qualities really are our true identity. And those secondary roles that we talked about before, mother, father, banker, whatever, the truth is that once we can call on these Christ powers, those secondary roles and goals in our lives take on new beauty and often become even richer, more cherished blessings. Our job is to express all the qualities of God on this earth. And our desire to express those divine attributes is really the manifestation of God's desire to express them through us. So it's a win-win situation. And we know that in John 8:12, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." And later in Matthew 5:14-16, he says, "You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket, but on a lampstand, where it gives light to all the house. And in the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." And so, as always, in the end, we have a choice. We always have a choice. We can live like those cave dwellers, allowing our minds to be ruled by lies of unworthiness, limitation, and fear, if that's the way we want to live our lives. We can turn our backs to our original goodness and purpose, or we can turn from the appearances and shadows to the light and love and peace and joy of God within. Living in the light, as the light, we can radiate divine expression and be filled with a sense of peace, purpose, and power that transforms our lives, helps us to see differently, helps us to live differently, and allows us to joyously fulfill our divine destiny. And I don't know about you, but to me that sounds a lot better than staying in the cave. So let's just take this into our hearts and minds as we affirm our God and our relationship to the divine. As we affirm, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one power, presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Amen.